I am recording.
No, I am recording.
Podcasting, like bounty hunting, is a complicated profession. They said we were the best in the parsec. They must be suffering from delusions of grandeur. The Journey Into Podcast is proud to present this journey into a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Join Marshall Latham and Rish Outfield as we explore this world of mystery and adventure, featuring many delusions of grandeur.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Delusions of Grandeur.
I'm out of it. For a little while, everybody gets delusions of grandeur.
The Star Wars Delusions of Grandeur. My name is Marshall Latham.
And I'm Rish Outfield. I wasn't sure if I was supposed to kick in there or wait for you to introduce me.
Right.
But I guess this is our show, not my show. Sorry, not your show.
I was going to just start talking. I figured, we better introduce ourselves first.
Well, no, it's good that you want to
Since talk. It's been so long.
How long has it been?
Whenever the first three episodes of Andor came out. So.
Okay.
It's been a while.
We haven't podcasted since then.
Yeah.
I've had a lot on my plate, but that's not really any excuse. Both of us have been podcasting since then. We've podcasted separately and together since then.
We have, yeah.
But we just haven't done any Delusions of Grandeur. We haven't really done outfield excursions much lately either.
We haven't.
And I think part of the reason that we're recording tonight is because of a text that you sent me the other day. Do you remember what it said?
Or
was it me that instigated that?
Yeah, you initiated. You asked, you said, hey, I haven't talked with you about Star Wars for a long time. And I said, yeah, I thought maybe that was a sign or something.
Yeah, it's a sign, all right. Going out of business.
Yeah, I took that in the absolute worst possible way.
But I knew you were busy. You know, I know that you've a lot of your time is recording and editing right now. So I understand why it's harder for us to get together. And I was doing this marathon and we had the conference and all that kind of stuff. So we've both been pretty busy.
Yeah. If I hadn't been doing an audiobook and you hadn't been doing your marathon, we actually got together in February physically. And it would have been great to just hang out and podcast for 3 or 4 hours, but we didn't do it because we both had so much on our plate. I got the impression you were pretty much exhausted.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we ate together and we went to a conference together, but we didn't podcast together.
Yeah, and I thought we would, you know, similar to when we went to Celebration, I thought, oh, we'll have lots of time to record. Both times we've gotten together, we haven't taken advantage of the recording time versus other things, but
yeah, when you said I figured it was a sign. The way I interpreted that is I figured that meant we're not going to be doing the podcast anymore. And I recently had that experience with Big Anklevich, where we had our Dunesteef podcast for years,
right?
And then one day he says, okay, this is it, we are done. And I tried to talk him off the ledge for months. And he's like, all right. We don't have to run the last episode yet. But then finally, you know, just that was what he was interested in doing, was ending the podcast. And so we did it. And maybe I was shell-shocked from that. But when you said it was a sign, I immediately thought, oh, the sign is going out of business. But here you are on the phone now, just a couple days after that text exchange. And so I was wrong, is what you're saying, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I just, to be honest, a little bit of feeling sorry for myself, or I was kind of disappointed. I thought I'd generate a little bit more interest with my marathon, and pretty much generated nothing other than people that were already signed in to Patreon and already, you know, avid listeners to the podcast. And I thought I'd get a little bit more interest, and I really didn't. I thought, wow, I spent a lot of time putting that together, and basically nobody cared.
I care.
So, yeah, you know, I was thinking, well, shoot, what should I cut? What's most important to me? And I didn't really want to get rid of Delusions of Grandeur, but we hadn't done an episode in a long time. So I thought, well, maybe there's not enough passion for us to talk about it anymore. So I kind of wanted to get your feeling for it.
Okay, well, that makes sense. I think we are on the same page. Sometimes it is difficult to muster enthusiasm. And it's so much easier for me to do my own podcast, the one that I do by myself, than any of the ones that I do with other people. Because if I'm in the mood to do it, I can just turn on the recorder and do it, no matter where I am. But the ones that you have with another person, they have to be available and they have to be willing to do it. And those are two things that are sometimes hard to line up. And you, a lot of times, have to get up at like 5:36 in the morning.
Dang it, we're cursed.
So asking you to stay up and record with me till midnight or later seems like a lot to ask. But also the downside to only one person is that if I don't feel like doing it, then it doesn't get done. Sometimes you'll have somebody else that is enthusiastic about it and you're like, all right, I can do that. Basically, the third season of Mandalorian has been going on now.
Yes.
And that's got me wanting to talk to you about Star Wars. That's got me wanting to, you know, look at the episodes and, oh, what do you think is going to happen and stuff like that, which is something that we did for the first two seasons. We did it for Obi-Wan. We started to do it for Andor and then stopped. We also did it with Book of Boba Fett, right? Or did we not do it with Obi-Wan?
We did.
We've done it with all the shows, right?
Yeah. Like with Obi-Wan, we talked about the series after it was over. But with Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett, we kind of followed it as it went. But we haven't done that yet on season 3.
And that's difficult. But there, at this, the point that we're recording this, there have been 3 episodes. And not a ton happens in those 3 episodes, so I thought we could talk about it. But more importantly, I thought maybe we should talk about what you feel like we should do as far as the podcast and your feelings on, you know, is it worth it? Is it more trouble than it's worth? Is it something that fulfills you and you look forward to, or has it become a chore?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's become a chore. I mean, you know, there's other Star Wars podcasts that I listen to, and they do every episode of Mandalorian. They do every episode of The Bad Batch. You know, they have a whole hour-long podcast and people calling in or asking questions and things like that. And I think that would become a chore to do something like that. As much as, you know, I'd kind of like to do that, but I just don't have the energy or the time, really. And for us to get together and do that would be probably impossible.
No, I get that. If we had a paycheck coming in episode to episode, that might be a little bit more incentive.
True.
But I could not talk for an hour about an episode of The Bad Batch. I don't think. Maybe we should try it, but not today. There's that other show that dropped that you and I watched the first episode of at Celebration, which is Tales of the Jedi.
Oh, right.
And I meant to sit down and watch all of those and talk to you about it, and I never did. But it would be fun to see if we could talk for an hour about that show.
Oh, I'm sure we could, especially the Dooku stuff. I think we could talk a lot about.
What's that smell?
Dookie. Shoot, I'm going to have to find that drop now. The Andor series, I'm not going to say that it was divisive. I don't think it was divisive in the way that Last Jedi was, or to a much, 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 much lesser extent, Rise of Skywalker was. But I didn't like Andor, and everyone else seemed to. And I had a conversation with my cousin Ryan, who, you know, you met on the Celebration just the other day, where I said, in my opinion, every single Star Wars series on Disney Plus has been a diminishing return, where I think Mandalorian was the best of the shows. And then what's after Mandalorian? I think it was Bad Batch. And what's after Bad Batch? Book of Boba Fett. And what's after Book of Boba Fett? Obi-Wan Kenobi. And what's after Obi-Wan Kenobi? Andor. And I have enjoyed those shows less with each installment. And he said, you could not have liked Andor less than Obi-Wan Kenobi. And I did.
Huh. I did enjoy Andor. And I can definitely see why people wouldn't like it. But I thought what was also unfortunate was a lot of people that liked Andor liked it so much that they said, this is the real Star Wars. This is what Star Wars should have been all along. This is the best Star Wars ever. And I'm like, well, I wouldn't go that far. So that's taking it way too far.
Yeah, see, that reminds me of 2005 when Revenge of the Sith came out. And there were people that were that exuberant about, you know, the greatest chapter. It was like, oh, this makes Return of the Jedi look like Ewok's battle for Endor. And I just, yeah, I stolidly turned my back on Revenge of the Sith and have never looked back. And maybe the orgiastic reaction to Andor was part of why I liked it so little, but I don't think so. I think it just was not up my alley. Right before we started recording, I told you that my cousin and I will stay up until 1 a.m. when the new episode of Mandalorian drops, and we will watch it quote-unquote live. And for Andor, it was really hard for me to stay interested, you know, at 1:45 in the morning,
right,
for that show, because I felt like nothing ever happened. And Obi-Wan Kenobi was also stretched taffy like you wouldn't believe. And there's a guy that edited the Obi-Wan Kenobi show into a 2-hour movie. And I was like, okay, there you go. That works. But I didn't see how you could edit Andor into a 2-hour movie.
Yeah, no, it was...
I just felt like it was really, really, really fatty, you know, in meat parlance. But there were other people that just loved that. And they loved, I'm going to use this term, which somebody else came up with. It wasn't me, but the banality of the Galactic Empire. They loved that there was paperwork and that there were peons and that were bureaucrats and there were lowly employees of the Empire that were bickering for like the second to lowest rung on the ladder and, you know, office politics and all that stuff. They loved that aspect of it. And to me, it was just like, that's not what I signed up for, guys. I love that Luke Skywalker made a world of difference. He saved the galaxy with what he did. You know what I mean? It was on such a huge scale, a bombastically gigantic scale, the Star Wars trilogy. And yeah, we never got to see what the person who maintains the mouse droids on the Death Star's life was like.
Right.
It just, that's not the story that George Lucas was telling.
Right.
But that was in some ways the story that Andor was telling. And you know, it's baby steps from a guy who only cares about himself to eventually sacrificing himself for the rest of the galaxy, for freedom, for his ideals and all that stuff. I just felt like it was way, way, way too slow. And there is a reason for that. This was a show that was envisioned as a 5-season series. And each season, you remember this, right? When they first announced this,
yeah.
Each season was going to be 1 year in the life of Cassian Andor leading up to Rogue One. That's what that first season was basically 1 year in the life of Cassian Andor. But then the higher-ups have pulled the plug, and so then it was going to be 3 seasons, remember? And they were going to compact 4 years into 2 seasons. And now it's just 2 seasons, and they've compacted the next 4 years into 1 season.
Yeah.
Of Andor season 2. And I feel bad for Tony Gilroy and those guys that had the rug pulled out from under their feet like that. But at the same time, I've no doubt that the second season will work in a way that the first season didn't, as far as pacing goes and as far as economy of story and, hey, do we really need this scene? And so, you know, I do look forward to Andor season two, even though I was not a fan of the first one.
Yeah, and I definitely, it's just a totally different pace. It's a totally different goal. It might be similar to what you're saying. But, you know, I thought there were a lot of interesting ideas and a lot of interesting characters that you kind of saw how it all fit together as far as the trajectory of things. But yeah, you have to be willing to accept something different than what we've had in the movies and with The Mandalorian. And I think people coming into watching The Mandalorian should not expect it to be like Andor, but maybe they're starting to, then we can talk about that. But it's just a different take on the world and the characters, but it fits in with everything that's come before. And you know, I think that was one of the things that I was excited about when, you know, remember when they talked about all these new directors coming in, that we knew J.J. Abrams was going to do the movie, and we knew that Josh Trank and some of these other people. And I thought, well, this will be interesting to see what some of these newer directors, how they perceive Star Wars and how they interpret these characters. And maybe I don't appreciate all of those thoughts and viewpoints from some of the things that we've received. But like with Andor, I think it was, you have to slow your roll and be willing to get into the minutiae and the politics and all that kind of stuff. Where with Mandalorian, I don't want that. I want to go back to the swashbuckling and the Western and the gunslinger and lone wolf and cub and all that kind of stuff. And I'm hoping that'll continue with the Mandalorian and maybe Ahsoka going forward. I think that'll be an interesting test to see, can we be excited about Ahsoka and her adventures with, oh, what's her name?
Sabine?
Yeah, with Sabine and that kind of stuff.
Well, that is next? That's this year, Ahsoka?
I think that's this year, yeah. I don't know when, but I think that's next on the docket after Mandalorian's over.
Are any of the people who are working on Mandalorian also working on Ahsoka, or is it a totally different group?
Well, it's definitely Dave Filoni, who's still entrenched with The Mandalorian as well. I don't know how much Jon Favreau is involved in Ahsoka, other than I'm sure he's a producer and all that, but I think most of the writing and stuff is Filoni on that one. So that'll be an interesting experiment to see how that goes. Because even Jon Favreau, you know, the same guy that wrote the first two seasons of The Mandalorian wrote The Book of Boba Fett, which was totally a different tone in and of itself, and not as fun and exciting, I don't think.
Well, Mandalorian is my bread and butter. It feels like it was written for me or my age group, but the era that it takes place in, even though it's not, you know, the original trilogy era. For example, we saw TIE interceptors in the most recent episode in The Convert.
Yeah.
And I love interceptors. That's from Return of the Jedi. And as far as I know, that's the only time we ever saw them was in Return of the Jedi. And they did way more in this episode than they ever did in any other Star Wars project. And every time I see a stormtrooper or a familiar looking droid or a Kowakian monkey lizard or, you know, one of the aliens that hung out at Jabba's palace or one of these ships, I feel like I'm coming home. And
R5-D4, I've really enjoyed him in the last few episodes.
Yeah, again, yeah, R5-D4 has had more to do in that one episode than he ever did in all of, you know, except for the children that had that toy and played with it on the playground.
Right.
And I think that's really interesting that they've given him like this cowardly personality, and he beeps and whistles, but he doesn't sound exactly like R2.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
That stuff really speaks to me. And, you know, now we're in the third season and, you know, third and a half season if you count Book of Boba Fett. And some of these characters like Greef Karga and Pelimoto, I feel like I know them and I'm happy when I see them again. The third episode of this season, we had another familiar face return, and I got a text from you about it, of course. And that's cool. I guess we can talk about that eventually, but somebody somewhere said that years have passed since the first episode of Mandalorian, and that we're now at like 10 years after Return of the Jedi instead of 5. And
well, I think Favreau mentioned in an interview somewhere that Grogu was with Luke Skywalker for 2 years or something like that.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't get that sense, but that's what he said.
Well, the only indicator for me is that now Greef Karga has a white beard.
Yeah.
Whereas he had a black beard the last time we saw him, but I don't think that there has been any actual statement of how much time has passed.
There hasn't been, yeah.
And there totally could have been in The Convert in the third episode, because clearly enough time has passed since Dr. Pershing was with Moff Gideon that they could have said, you know, in the years since or in the months since or, you know, whatever it is. But I, at some point, I'd like them to say, oh, I haven't seen you in, kind of thing.
Right.
Just so we know.
Or when they briefly name-checked Cara Dune and said that, you know, oh, yeah, once she brought in Moff Gideon, she's become a ranger or whatever, you know. But they didn't say.
Yeah, she's special forces on some kind of secret mission or something
like
that.
Something
like that. I liked that they at least said her name,
yeah,
and explained that she's gone.
But they didn't, again, they didn't give a time. They didn't say, oh yeah, she's been doing that for the last 3 years or 2 years or something.
They could have. But yeah, there obviously a bunch of time has passed on Nevarro, because if you compare the way it looked in season one to the way it looks now, where there are trees and greenery and people walking around with wealth, and there was a dude and he had one of those little dragons that tried to eat Greef Karga on his shoulder as like a domesticated pet.
Yeah.
I felt like, okay, that's showing that they have tamed this outlaw, this frontier world. Yeah, there were Kowakian monkey lizards just like living in the trees. That's twice I've mentioned them. Let's see if I can fit it in a third time during this podcast. Whereas before we saw them like being eaten and in cages. And
yeah.
It's just a much more prosperous, bright, positive world. And that bar is now a school. And I think we did see that school in season two. But somebody somewhere said that that is the school where Jude Law teaches on Skeleton Crew.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, if that turns out to be the case, we'll be like, oh, they planted the seeds for that in Mandalorian. But I wish that like Jude Law had just come out and we'd been like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a teacher at that school.
Yeah, that he was confronting the pirates or something like that.
But they left IG-11 on Nevarro being fixed by the, do you know what they're called? The
Babu Freaks is all I can think of. Yeah.
Hey! Yeah, we're going to have to bleep that. I'm sorry. No offense, Bria. I'll bleep it if you want me to. But yeah, that felt like something where, okay, we're going to come back and IG-11 is going to be okay. And that I'm looking forward to because I love IG-11. But essentially he had R5-D4 and that served the purpose that he needed a droid, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of weird that, oh, I can't do anything without IG-11. But then in the next episode, he just takes R5-D4 and takes care of business. But yeah, I'm assuming IG-11 will be back. I hope so. And that was a pretty neat sequence as well, you know, where just with his head and arm or whatever, he's out to kill. His programming has been reverted back or whatever. So that was kind of neat. I liked that.
It was very Terminator-esque, right?
It was, yeah.
Do you remember when the Terminator was crawling around on, and it was just a torso and one arm? What did you think of seeing, and again, if we had Pablo Hidalgo on the phone, he could tell us what the Babu Fricks species are. What did you think of seeing those again?
It was very interesting. You know, it's kind of one of those things. Now that they're in the universe and we know that they fix droids, now they're going to show, are they just going to show up everywhere? Whenever you need a droid fixed, you go to one of these guys. But they aren't in, well, I guess they are in Rise of Skywalker, but it's kind of, it didn't bother me, so to speak. But I thought it was kind of convenient that now these guys are known as the droid fixers.
Well, I don't particularly like them. I Shirley Henderson's voice really bothers me, and apparently she voices all of them.
Oh, okay.
But the part where Grogu grabbed hold of one and hugged it, and it was like a puppet hugging another puppet, I really liked that. That made it all worth it. Grogu is great, by the way. They know how much to use him. I think we talked about this when season two ended, of like, will people watch Mandalorian without Grogu in it? And we'll never have to answer that question.
We won't. Yeah, I'm wondering when he's going to speak.
I think we will see him speak English this season.
You think so? Okay.
Yeah, because he's had some kind of babbling baby talk in a couple of these episodes. And I think Pelimoto thought that he had said her name.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think it's possible that his first words will be daddy. I don't know. But yeah, at one point, Bo-Katan referred to Din Djarin as Grogu's dad.
Yeah.
And that's something that I'd like to talk about. I have never liked Bo-Katan, and I always felt like they might be setting her up as an antagonist, as somebody that is going to have to fight Mando eventually for rulership of Mandalore, or for the Darksaber, or just, you know, for which ideology is better. And I certainly felt like, oh, that's coming in episode one, where she was sitting alone on a throne doing nothing. Can you imagine? She was just sitting there. She wasn't even sleeping. You know, she was just stewing or whatever. And he comes and he asks for her to go with him. And she explains, you know, that she's lost all of her followers when she came back without the Darksaber. And they've all spread all over. And he can just go to Mandalore if he wants to, but he's going to do it by himself. And I was like, okay, it's not just me. This is a surly, unpleasant, almost villainous character, right? Everybody else has to be on the same page as me now, right? But then in the next episode, I feel like, no, they're setting her up to be an ally. Maybe I've been wrong all this time. There is that moment in the second episode where Grogu comes by himself because Mando has been captured. And she gets up off of her throne. Ooh, can you imagine how angry she must be to actually stand up? And she goes stomping down to the starfighter to get rid of him once and for all. I think she says that to her droid.
Yep.
I'm going to get rid of him. And I don't know what that meant. Did that mean violence? Did that mean she was just going to tell him off? Did that mean just, hey, I don't want to ever see you again. You remind me of all that I have lost in my life. We don't know, because she sees Grogu, and he's trying to let her know that his father is in trouble. And she goes and risks her life to save Din Djarin. To me, that's like, oh, okay. Well, I was wrong about whatever she intended to do when she got up from that throne. Will you tell me your feelings on Bo-Katan from way back in the animated series, and where you think that is going?
You know, I'm a little bit confused. I want to think that she's going to be an ally, and that maybe she's feeling accepted now by the covert or whatever, now that they've accepted her. But part of me thinks, you know what? She's waiting so that she can get these people on her side and go against Din Djarin and get the Black Saber back, and or the Dark Saber. So maybe she's being won over. You know, was she the convert, or was Pershing the convert in the last episode, or both of them? But yeah, going back to Clone Wars day, yeah, she was always kind of very prideful and wanted power, and was against her sister, and thought her sister made the wrong decisions, and and that kind of stuff. But she's kind of been humbled over the last little bit with the siege of Mandalore and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I think they're trying to play a little bit loose with her so that we don't quite know where she's her alliances are. But they're giving us that hope that, she's going to be an ally rather than an enemy. Who knows where she's going to end up?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I just miss Koska Reeves, you know?
We haven't seen anything of Koska Reeves, right?
No, no. I just had to say her name because you made me remember her name. So
yeah, I remember, it's just been a couple of years, but when season two happened, and it's like, this is Koska Reeves and this is Axe Wolves. I was like, I'm never going to remember those names. Why would I ever need to know those names? But here we are in 2023, and I know both of their names. The first episode of season three was called The Apostate. And an apostate is somebody who steps away from a church, who falls away, who becomes either an enemy of the church or is disfellowshipped from the church. Is that your understanding of that word?
Yeah, or they've lost their faith. They're walking away.
And so clearly, and
maybe not on their own, you know, maybe they have been kicked out, you know, that they've gone against the dogma or whatever.
So clearly Din Djarin is that apostate. In fact, I think Paz Vizsla, is that his name? I think he refers to him as that.
Yeah, he does.
And yeah, that's another one of those guys that has always rubbed me the wrong way. He's always seemed like an antagonist. He's always seemed like an obstacle that's going to get in Mando's way. And when they had the fight in Book of Boba Fett and Mando defeated him, but, you know, he didn't kill him or anything like that. He defeated him. He made him yield. And then immediately, like, the bad blood is over. I thought, okay, well, that's the end of it, because Mando is kicked out of their little group anyway. And it was a group of three, if you remember then.
Right.
But now we're in, a couple years later, right? I'm assuming.
Yeah.
And there's a whole bunch of new converts, and they're all at like Lake Powell in Utah having a baptism. Is that how you interpreted that?
Yeah, really. Yeah, they're really working on that religious iconography there with the baptism and all that.
And I guess we sort of repeat that in episode two, The Mines of Mandalore, because, I mean, it is almost a literal baptism. You have to bathe in the living waters.
Right.
And the mines under Mandalore, only then will you essentially be forgiven of your sin. You will be born anew. And both of them have that happen. And then the armorer in episode three, she acts as though all of Bo-Katan's sins have been washed away.
Yeah.
If you remember in Book of Boba Fett, she blamed Bo-Katan for the destruction of their world. She said that she had fallen off the true path. She had taken the Darksaber by...
as a gift?
Friendship or some dumb thing like that, instead of by combat.
Yep.
And because of this blasphemy, she brought ruin upon our world. And then at the end of episode three, she's been baptized. And the armorer says, you know, you are one of us. You are your what is it she says?
I can't remember, you know, how she put it.
It's something very, very formal, very, very religious. Like, verily I say, you are a Mandalore. This is the way, kind of thing or whatever. And you are one of us. And I was just like, I don't get that. How is that even possible that you could forgive somebody that you had that much animosity toward? But clearly, the armorer believes in her faith.
Yeah.
And it's like, these are the steps that it would take for someone to be forgiven of their crimes, of their sins, of their going on the wrong path. And she did it. And by my faith, that means she too is redeemed. And I just found that very, very interesting, because Katee Sackhoff, Bo-Katan doesn't take off her helmet. She doesn't, you know, make fun of him for his religious fanaticism or whatever. She seems to be converted because she saw the creature. What's it called? The
Mythosaur.
The Mythosaur. She saw it and she doesn't say anything. And I thought, well, maybe she had a religious conversion. under the water, because she says, you know, the mythosaur was legend, a legendary beast that was said to live down here centuries ago, like the very dawn of our people. And then she sees it. She sees that it's real. And she, am I reading too much into this?
No, I get, because, you know, before he goes into the living waters, she's mocking it. She's reading the plaque and saying, oh, yeah, this is all the stuff I grew up with. And just kind of had a snide, you know, smile while she read the legend of the mythosaur and the living waters and all that kind of stuff. And then when she actually sees it, I mean, I think she's rethinking her entire life and belief in what Mandalore stands for and all that kind of stuff.
Well, it doesn't hurt that all of her worldly belongings seem to be destroyed,
yes,
by the Empire. When they get back to her moon, she had a moon where her castle was, and Thai bombers just obliterate it, right?
Yeah.
Who sent those, and what were they doing there?
You know, as I was watching the episode, I assumed that was the forces of Moff Gideon that are still out there and loyal to him. I don't think he's escaped or anything like that, but I think they're working towards that. And that was my initial thought. I've heard some speculation that perhaps they're tying this in with where they're going with Ahsoka, and maybe this is Admiral Thrawn's troops or ships. I don't know or have any. I don't know if I would like that or not, I guess. But
they make no mention of Thrawn in that whole episode, do they?
They don't, no. But maybe that's going to be, you know, the reveal or something.
Yeah, and you're right. It could totally be going there. And if it does, that would explain. Because she has some line about, you know, how are there this many TIE fighters from a remnant ship of the Empire, you know? You know, clearly this is something that we haven't seen before. Or, you know, someone that we haven't seen before. But at the same time, it's like, what possible beef could Grand Admiral Thrawn have with Bo-Katan?
Yeah, I don't know.
But does he? Did they cross paths during Rebels?
I don't remember if they did or not.
Well, surely Sabine Wren crossed paths with
Thrawn. Yes, for sure.
And Sabine was the one that gave the Darksaber to Bo-Katan, right?
That's correct, yeah.
So they have some kind of connection. Anyway, it made more sense to me that it was Moff Gideon's people.
Yeah, me too.
And then almost the whole rest of the episode takes place on Coruscant. And that was really, really interesting to me that they took this diversion in the middle of the episode that went on for a very long time. And we get to see politics. And again, we get to see the banality of the New Republic instead of the banality of the Empire. And the thing that shocked me was that they seemed really similar.
Yeah.
Like strikingly similar. The New Republic, which you and I would think would be this great, better thing because it's led by Mon Mothma and Princess Leia and Lando Calrissian and Admiral Akbar, who are these people that we love. But they had these prisoners, and instead of giving them names, they gave them numbers, and that felt like something the Empire would
do.
Yeah,
that was really strange to me. I'm like, why are they doing that? I mean, I can see why they'd all have the same uniform, you know, so you knew that they were formerly
parolees
or whatever. Yeah, but yeah, I thought it was really weird that they got designations like a stormtrooper rather than to use their names.
Yeah, I felt really defensive of the New Republic. I wanted to be like, whoa, 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 somebody, Princess Leia does not know about this, or she would put a stop to it. And it's like, oh, the mind flayer. No. Princess Leia would put a stop to this if she knew about it, kind of thing. But I've heard a lot of people say, well, this is where the First Order comes from. The New Republic is lazy and they allow themselves to be corrupted from within. And this is the first steps of that. And it's hard for me to argue with that because the First Order was essentially the Empire again. and it had to come from somewhere.
And with the Mind Flayer thing, if they really only used it at lower settings, why didn't they limit the knob? Why was she able to easily just turn it up to 11 rather than, you know, they should have had some kind of a stop on that or a different knob or something. But I thought that was interesting. Oh, just in case, we did leave it available to actually destroy your mind if we need to. What would Admiral Akbar think?
I'm not sure. We did see a Mon Calamari in that scene, and he was kind of an ineffectual, weak character, and it was sad to think, okay, you know, this is Akbar's nephew. He's not quite as noble as Akbar was.
Yeah.
The New Republic is something that I think was probably invented by Timothy Zahn in his books, just as Coruscant was essentially created by him. I mean, I know that Revenge of the Jedi originally took place on Imperial Center and all that, but a lot of like these details were things that he created.
Yep.
But I'm not sure how much of that is considered canon. And if none of it is, then this is our first glimpse at like the New Republic.
It is, yeah.
And it seemed like the only difference between Coruscant then and Coruscant now is that there are a lot of aliens walking around. But is that canon, that the Empire, that Palpatine was super racist and only wanted humans on his world, and that, is that something that has been erased, or is that something, did we ever get glimpses of that in Clone Wars?
Well, I mean, you know, there were, of course, senators, alien senators and things like that, but I'd have to pay more attention.
Right, but Clone Wars takes place before the rise of the Empire, right?
Right.
I'm just wondering if we watched an episode of Andor that took place on Coruscant, did we ever see an alien on the planet? And if not, does that mean that that idea that Timothy Zahn had, that Palpatine only wanted humans there, does that become canon again?
Well, I think watching Andor, all the Coruscant stuff there, I don't think there were very many aliens, at least in the Empire ranks. I didn't see any. You know, there weren't a lot of aliens, period, on the show. But was that because the Empire doesn't want aliens, or because Tony Gilroy doesn't want to do aliens? I don't know.
Okay, you know, that's a fair question.
Yeah, but I think that's the general feel of it, is that, yeah, the Emperor preferred humans and looked down on anything else.
Right, except for Grand Admiral Thrawn, I think. they established, and now, are those books canon? Those are not, right?
The new ones? I think the new ones are.
Well, Zahn wrote these Thrawn books, right? Timothy Zahn did.
Right.
And they said that he was a Chiss, and that the Empire was super racist, but he was so good at what he did that the Empire was willing to make exception for him.
Yeah, that's true. I guess, what's the other guy, though? I always forget. Is it Masimoto?
I don't know.
Or
who are you talking about?
The Emperor's right-hand man. The blue guy with the tails.
Oh.
I always call him Masimoto. I don't think it's right, but
I think it's Masameda.
Masameda. There you go. That's it.
He got mentioned in something Disney Plus that we saw, but I don't think we saw him.
Well, he's in the Bad Batch, but...
Oh, okay.
I don't think you've been catching up on those, so...
No, I really wish I could, but I don't. I will try. Now that we're podcasting again, maybe I have incentive to go back and watch that. And somebody told me that we see Yaddle die, and I was like, I've got to see that. So I will try and check out that Tales of the Jedi and Bad Batch when I get a chance.
Yeah.
I did see the first episode of the second season of Bad Batch, and all of the clones, the team, the crew, had new paint jobs on their uniform, on their armor. And I was like, Hasbro, come on, man. I want a toy of every single one of these. And I'm sure that there are thousands of other people that want toys of these. What is going on? But the days of them having toys out for when something comes out, is far behind us.
Speaking of Hasbro, how many new Mandalorians could they put out with just all of these new, recruits, man?
They could put out like a 20 characters box set if they wanted to.
Yeah.
And it would sell because every one of those armors was interesting and distinct. And there were a couple of where I was like, oh, hey, is that Boba? Oh, nope, that's not Boba Fett. It was really neat to see all of these new Mandalorians. It's just a fantastic design that Joe Johnston came up with. It lends itself to different colors and variations on the helmets and horns and sigils and crests. And I love it. I mean, like even the kid Mandalorian looked cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they've got Doug Chang on board as one of the designers, and it's like everything he touches looks good. Even his prequel stuff, which I'm not a fan of the movies, but his designs are just beautiful.
Yeah.
And yet, yeah, like they bring in a new protocol droid in the first episode, and I was like, toy. You guys make a toy of that. And there are these little tiny roller droids that are pulling Greef Karga's cape.
Yeah.
And I was like, toy, I want a toy of that.
I'll take one.
It's weird that, you know, whatever the opposite of a golden age, we seem to be living in that as far as the toys go. And I'm sure we've talked about it on the air, but I guess Hasbro took such a bath on Rogue One and Last Jedi and Solo toys that now they're really, really hesitant to put anything out. And that's not really an exaggeration. It's just like the idea that they might lose money on a character or an alien or, you know, a ship or whatever has got them just quaking in their boots, and they're unwilling to take these risks anymore. And it's really sad because so many of these designs would make for excellent toys. And the fact that we haven't gotten an N1 Starfighter for the Mandalorian toy yet, that just blows my mind.
Yeah, they could sell it with its own little Grogu that fits right up in there, you know? Crazy.
Anyway, very, very briefly, the third episode has this big section on Coruscant, and it's all about Dr. Pershing. I think they give him a first name.
Yeah, I think it starts with a P. I can't remember what it was. But.
And he was the guy that was taking Grogu's blood, and he was working first for the client and then for Moff Gideon. Doing some kind of cloning. They even come right out and say that he was trying to take DNA from two different hosts and merge it into a third person, right?
I think so, yeah.
Taking the best qualities of both of those people. And now in the New Republic, all of that stuff is banned. All of that stuff is outlawed. And he has a parole officer droid that he has to check in with, and the droid asks him questions like, have you had any negative feelings toward the New Republic this week, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And at one point he asks the droid if he would be able to, just as a hobby, like do some of his experiments and the things that, you know, he was really passionate about before. And it says no. You know, that's against the law. I think it may even threaten him. That, you know, he would lose the freedom that he has if he did that. And he and a couple other parolees get together, and among them is Katie O'Brien's character. I don't think she ever had a name before this episode.
Yeah, not until this episode, yeah.
But she was the female Imperial officer that I was so excited about in season 2. I was like, I can't believe it. Look, it's a girl. And yeah,
I was going to text you the next day and say, she's back. But I didn't know if you'd seen the episode and would understand what I was saying.
Oh, I wish you had, because I would have known exactly what you're talking about. She is like he is, right? She's an ex-Imperial that is being reformed, reprogrammed,
reintegrated into the...
Reintegrated, okay. You know, it makes me want to go back and watch all of the first 2 seasons and see what Dr. Pershing was like in those episodes, because he is really a sympathetic character in this. He's sad and remorseful and, you know, sort of a broken man. He explains that his mother died from something that could easily have been solved by just like cloning whatever organ failed in her.
Right.
And so he dedicated himself to medicine so that other people would not have to go through what he went through. And now he's being prevented from doing that. He strikes me as a genuinely good person. And I'm wondering if we were supposed to get that impression, but I sure did. And
yeah, well, I remember, you know, in that the second season of Mandalorian, you know, when they captured him, you know, they're saying, "You're going to have to tell us." He's like, "Okay, here's the deal. This is where everything's at on Gideon's ship." He wasn't hesitant to help them out to defeat Moff Gideon. So that kind of won me over to him in that episode. And so, yeah, I think he's a good guy. However, I didn't get that. I never got that feeling from Katie O'Brien. I always suspected that she was up to something. But
okay, and I did as well. Can we find out what her character's name is?
It's Alaya Kane.
Again, it's one of those names where it's like, no, that's, I'm not going to be able to remember that. But, you know, a month from now, if we've said it enough times, I will. Yeah, she seemed to have too much going on. She was too confident, too well set up. She was too on the in compared to Dr. Pershing,
yeah,
who was just a lost soul that I never trusted her. And she, little by little, is sort of corrupting him. She's tempting him to maybe go back to his earlier ways. Like, yeah, break the rules. You know, hey, you don't have to do this stuff. Oh, do you remember what it was like in the Empire, kind of thing? And what is it that breaks the what is the straw that breaks the camel's back for him? And he decides, I will go on her little her joyride or whatever.
I think it was when he asked the droid, you know, hey, can I ever do this just as a hobby? And it's like, no, this is against all these regulations. You can never play with cloning again. I think that was what finally did it.
See, that's interesting to me, because during the Clone Wars, the clones were the good guys, right?
Yeah.
And history, which at this point is only 30-something years old, has completely turned on its ear? And cloning is bad? Clones are bad? Is it because the clone army helped put Palpatine on the throne? And that was an utterly destructive time in history?
Yeah, that's a good question, because like a lot of the stuff that's going on with the Bad Batch this year is, or this season, is talking about clones' rights and that kind of stuff. And so sympathetic toward the clones and the position that they're in being replaced and all those kinds of things. But maybe the New Republic knows that the Emperor, that Palpatine was wanting to do more with cloning. Maybe they found out about some of his experiments or whatever. So they don't want the possibility of furthering the Emperor's. That's all I can come up with for that. But
The Bad Batch, those are failed clones, right? Or were they attempts at making something new, making something better? That didn't go right.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and watch some of those initial appearance of the Bad Batch. But they always talk about being defective clones, but they were so useful that they became their own troop or whatever. Clone Force 99.
Right. Well, like Wrecker is super big and strong.
Yep.
And Crosshair is a perfect marksman.
Yep.
And I feel like Hunter is such a good like combat guy that he's able to plan. He's like Sherlock Holmes in the Robert Downey Jr. thing, you know, where he's like able to, he's a master strategist or whatever.
Tracker.
He's a tracker. Okay, maybe I'm misremembering what his deal was. But were there clones where they're like, okay, we're going to fix this clone so it doesn't have an expiration date, so it's not aging super rapidly, or we're going to do this clone so that it can breathe underwater, or so that it, you know, doesn't need nutrients to survive? Did they ever do these kind of genetic engineering things, experiments to make something better?
Not that they, not, not that they've presented in the Clone Wars that I remember.
What is Omega? What was the point of Omega? Was she intentionally made? Or was that an accident as well?
Yeah, I don't know if that was an accident or that was like Llama Sue or whatever. Like that was her pet project. That's kind of the mystery of the Bad Batch is why is Omega so important?
Okay, that they've never revealed that. All right. Okay, well, these are just questions that I had. And what is Katie O'Brien's character's name?
Aliyah Kane.
Aliyah Kane. She, I hate to use the S word because it's loaded, but I'm going to use it. She essentially seduces Dr. Pershing to go into a decommissioned Star Destroyer and get the stuff that he will need to continue his experiments.
Yes.
And then they are caught and she just turns right around and gives him up. And the fact that she is a woman and he is a man made me think, you know, that there is a seduction going on here, but there's no romantic aspect to it. It's no different than if it had been another male ex-imperial.
Right, that became his buddy or whatever. Yeah.
Right. It's just the fact that she is the only female imperial officer from that era that I think we've seen. And he is a vulnerable, lonely person. But I wondered if I was just reading into that. She pretends to be his friend.
I'm sure she used whatever she could, you know, if he was attracted to her, then she would use that, you know, to convert him.
Okay.
I thought she was trying to recruit him to be on the Moff Gideon team or whatever. I didn't see that she was totally going to betray him, but
yeah, I don't understand. So this device that they hook him up to at the end, that is what they referred to as a mind flayer in season 2 of Mandalorian, like some horrible thing that the Empire has.
Right.
And the New Republic uses it for rehabilitation now because it like puts you in a happy place, right? On its low settings.
Yeah.
It calms you down or whatever. It makes you susceptible to, it's like hypnosis or whatever, right? But then the second that, what is Katie O'Brien's character's name?
Aliyah Kane.
We need to just record you saying it and just plop it in there every time. The second she's alone with him, she turns that thing up to its maximum setting and he's like writhing in pain. To what end?
I guess to get rid of him. That he's a loose end now that she's got the genetic equipment, I guess. They just needed the equipment. They needed to know what was needed. But I would think they would want his brains or whatever, you know, to totally use him as to get what they want. Because he's a smart guy. He knows how to do all that stuff.
Yeah, I don't understand why you would. I mean, except for she is evil and sometimes, you know, we need a cartoon villain. But does it kill him or does it just make him slow or does it just reset everything in a really painful way? And the next day he's going to have no memory that, you know, and maybe you can recruit him again. I think it would just be a smarter move to turn it up to a painful level and then whisper in his ear, you are loyal to Moff Gideon. If it's like hypnosis, but we don't know. My guess is that there are future episodes that will fill us in on what it did and what it,
yeah,
what it means.
I would assume he's like McMurphy in One Floor of the Cuckoo's Nest after he got his frontal lobotomy.
Oh, no. He was totally lobotomized by Nurse Ratched at the end of that.
Yeah.
Well, that's too bad because I liked the character. And surely he was more use to the Empire with a brain than without. But I'm not sure where they're going with it. We never saw what happened to her at the end of season 2. And that really upset me because they were setting her up as being somebody and she was unique and she had a unique look and then she's just gone and they neither showed her dead nor showed her escape. But here she is again. And so I feel like, okay, well, our questions will be answered eventually.
Hopefully.
But there was one other thing I wanted to talk about before we go. Apparently there is a character on the Clone Wars show that people are suspecting that the Armorer is. And when they said the name of this character, I was just like, oh, I don't know who that is. I'm going to have to ask Marshall who that is. I guess there was a character on Clone Wars that had some connection to Bo-Katan that was a Mandalorian, but I've already forgotten what the character's name was. I've already forgot Elia Kane.
Well, you had texted me and you said, hey, I want to talk to you about this character called Rook Cast. And I didn't recognize that name at all. I did look it up, and I kind of remember the character from Clone Wars. She was one of the main Mandalorians that were part of Darth Maul's Shadow Collective after he took over Death Watch. I don't really remember her that much, so I can't speak to whether she's the Armorer or not, but I guess maybe she's one of the only female Mandalorians that are known in the canon. So that's why they're going there. But
okay.
That could be one of those. Is that a Star Wars name or a crap name?
And it's Rook Cast, like two K's right next to each other.
Yep. Cast. K-A-S-T. Rook Cast.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that obviously doesn't mean anything to you.
No.
But if the Armorer turned out to be somebody that we knew from an earlier series, you wouldn't help but feel like, oh, they planned this all along.
Yeah. I'm more interested in the Armorer than I ever have been, though. Just like, how did she get power? Why is she so important? Why is she the keeper of the lore kind of thing? And why does everybody like Paz Vizsla and all these other people, you know, I don't think Paz Vizsla likes the fact that both Din Djarin and Bo-Katan are now accepted as part of the covert, or, you know, that they are renewed Mandalorians. I think he has a beef with both of them probably. But yet he's willing to submit to whatever the Armorer says. So I'm really interested in her now. Where did she come from? It might diminish it for me though, if she ends up being Rook Cast. I had a character that I wanted to ask you what you thought of it. What was your thought of the pirate, the leader of the pirates from the first episode that looked like something out of a Martin Sidney Croft thing?
I thought he looked like Swamp Thing. But
kind of.
I guess he looked a little bit like Davy Jones in the Pirates of the Caribbean
kind
movies.
Of, yeah.
But
yeah.
He's all seaweedy, right? Instead of squiddy.
Right.
Davy Jones had just a wonderful design. I loved his design. And yeah, I did hear people complain about the design of this guy. It didn't really bother me. He is goofy looking, yes.
Well, I guess just, and maybe, you know, maybe if he shows up more often, I'll get used to him. But I was thinking, man, this is like Pizza the Hut, only he's green. Maybe he'll grow on me a little bit.
So he did bother you. You don't like the design.
I didn't really care for it, yeah.
If they made a toy, you would not buy it.
No.
See, it would make a really good toy. Maybe not as good as all of these armored Mandalorians. But yeah, I looked up Rook Cast. And yeah, she's got a good design too. They should make a toy of that. I guess they won't make a toy of anything.
Yeah, but I guess maybe going back to this third episode, I thought the pacing was really strange. You know, we have this huge, exciting battle with all the TIE interceptors and all that kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden we're on Coruscant and we're there for like 40 minutes, 45 minutes, I don't know, with nothing. That's all we're talking about is, now I forgot, Elia Kane and and the scientist guy.
At the very end
of the episode, yeah, Dr. Pershing. Then we go back to Mando and Bo-Katan and all that. I thought it might have worked better if it was like the Star Wars movies where it cut back and forth between Coruscant and Bo and Din Djarin and stuff. But
you know, I think you're absolutely right. Enough time passes for Mando and Bo-Katan that they could have split that up, interspersing back and forth, and I think it would have held our interest a little bit more back and forth. But I also feel like it was deliberate that they chose, okay, we're going to stay on Coruscant until this storyline plays itself out. And then only then will we go back to the Din Djarin's storyline.
Yeah.
And I think that there were people that were upset by that. I heard people say, they said it was boring. I didn't think it was boring. I found it really interesting, but I didn't know where it was going. And maybe if I saw it a second time, knowing where it was going, I might be bored. But I'm not sure. I like the character of Dr. Pershing. And the whole time I was like, what is going on? What? Why are you guys doing this? There has to be a method to the madness. Okay, so there is a line, and it's like a throwaway line where they said, I heard that Moff Gideon escaped on his way to the tribunal.
Right.
Do you remember that line?
I do remember that.
And it was supposed to just be like an empty rumor, like Lower Decks in Star Trek The Next Generation, where one of them says, I heard that it's Ambassador Spock and we're smuggling him across the neutral zone. And it just turns out to be like what uninformed people talk about. Do you know what I'm talking about, by the way, with that Lower Decks episode?
Yeah.
You know, it could be that, but it could also be like, you know, the ship arrived that was supposed to take Moff Gideon to his trial or to the penal colony, and he was not aboard.
Yeah.
Certainly we haven't seen the end of that character, right?
No, he has to come back, I would think.
Otherwise, they would have just let him kill himself in
right
in the last episode of the second season.
Yeah, maybe Alaya Kane got him free.
I would be totally fine with that.
Yeah.
I want to know who the main antagonist is of this season. And I don't know. I thought it would be Bo-Katan. There was a moment where I thought it would be the Armorer.
Yeah.
It could be Thrawn. It could be Moff Gideon. I suppose it's possible that Elia Kane, hey, I got her name,
hey,
will rise up and be this major antagonist. It could be Jon Favreau's character. I guess it could be the Green Pirate, but I don't think so.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that we don't have with The Mandalorian this season that we have had is, what is the goal? What is the mission? You know, the mission in the first two was to, well, mostly the second season, I guess, was to get Grogu to a Jedi. And the first season, I guess, was just to protect Grogu from all these other things. But now Grogu's still there, and Mandalorians has a mission, I guess. But I thought the whole arc of the third season was going to be him being redeemed by going to Mandalore. But three episodes in, and he's already taken care of all that. So they must have something else planned.
Well, when he tells the Armorer's followers that the air is perfectly breathable back on our world, there's nothing stopping us from going there and reclaiming it and at least starting to find a place that we can call our own. What will the response be?
I would think a lot of them would want to go.
Like, he obviously answers to the Armorer, and the Armorer has this religious hold on her people.
Yeah.
But he also has the Darksaber, and it is foretold by that very religion that someday a Mandalorian will wield the Darksaber and reclaim our world. And so it's just like, well, how do you not see this as an authority? You know, whoever wields this thing basically has the right to lead us. I'm not sure. I mean, maybe there will be a tug of war as far as who's in charge here, who is going, and if Bo-Katan is truly on his side and not going to stab him in the back at some point, she could be the one that's like, I've got your back. You know, wherever you go, I will go. And let's see how many of these we can get to go with us. And there's going to be like some civil war among them. I still have no idea where it's going.
Yeah,
she could be just totally pretending too, to be converted.
Yeah.
But, well, we'll, by the time this episode comes out, we will probably know.
Definitely. We'll know more, at least. That's for sure. I thought of one more question I had for you for these episodes.
Okay.
What did you think of the creatures on Mandalore, the sub-dwellers? I really liked them. I thought they were cool. I've heard people complain about them, but I thought they were pretty cool. Old school type monsters.
Okay, what they seemed to be to me was these are references to the Morlocks from the Time Machine.
Yeah,
that's a good the 1960s George Pal Time Machine. That's what they seemed to look like to me. And I noticed they had multiple green eyes, which I thought was really cool. And there were like alligators with glowing green eyes too, which I really like. They didn't seem to be CG to me. They seemed to be guys in suits, and I'm all for that.
Yeah.
I liked that they were, you know, scary. Not sure that I need a toy of these things, but
true. Yeah.
Was that something we had seen before on the Clone Wars cartoon?
I don't think so. Bo-Katan knows who they are, but yeah, I don't know if we've ever seen those. I'll have to watch one of those every Easter egg in this episode videos to find out.
That's right. Yeah, there was the scene in the very first episode where they go into hyperspace and Grogu sees these whales and he seems to be able to communicate with them or you know, connect to them in some way. And that meant nothing to me. But yeah, one of those videos was like, hey, this is important. These are the beings that took Grand Admiral Thrawn and Ezra Bridger at the end of Rebels. So these will clearly tie in later. And I was just like, oh, okay. Well, thank you for letting me know. Otherwise, I wouldn't have known.
Yeah, I recognized him from Rebels. But I thought it was subtle enough. You know, it wasn't like, huh? Look, the whales are back. You know, it was just kind of a subtle little thing of Grogu communing with these things floating through hyperspace. I thought they did that pretty cool. So I guess we're liking these episodes, but apparently the ratings are very low for The Mandalorian this season compared to previous seasons.
Okay, well, why is that?
Well, I can think of a couple things. Maybe people are angry still that Gina Carano got fired from the show, but I think that would be a minority. Maybe it's people that didn't watch, you know, we talked about that when we talked about Book of Boba Fett. Were there people that didn't watch that because they weren't interested in Boba Fett and they missed out on the whole getting Grogu back and all that? The first episode did do a lot of reaffirming what we learned, at least as far as the Din Djarin's concerned.
That's true. She basically repeats the whole speech.
Yeah.
About what he has to do.
So I don't know. That's kind of a curious one.
Not a lot of people watched Andor either.
True.
Do you think it's franchise fatigue?
Oh, I hate that term.
Oh, really?
I understand the term, but everything is, oh, it's fatigue. Comic book fatigue. Star Wars fatigue. But I get it, you know. Like you've talked about before, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. You know, maybe people have not enjoyed enough of some of these shows that they're like, well, I don't need to keep up with these Star Wars shows. But, you know, they're not the true fans like we are.
Well, I like these characters and I like the show and I'm definitely willing to give it a go. They would have to go pretty far to make me not like Star Wars anymore.
Yeah.
And however many episodes of this podcast we've done, I would think it's super evident that Star Wars is just a huge part of my day-to-day life and of who I am, you know, the things that I like, the things that are important to me. And I don't imagine anything will ever change that. And so, yeah, eventually there will be shows that I don't watch because it's too hard or just, you know, the ad campaign is really, really gross. Or there have been a bunch of bad episodes in a row. That does happen with shows and series and franchises. But yeah, we've not reached that point for me yet, especially with this show.
No, I really like it. And, you know, maybe Book of Boba Fett was just probably a bad idea. Because it really did disrupt, you know, how long have we waited between seasons 2 and 3 of The Mandalorian? Maybe they needed to keep that momentum going and just go right on with season 3 and do that Luke Skywalker stuff at the beginning of the season. instead of doing it in the middle of Book of Boba Fett. I don't know. I don't think Mandalorian will be in jeopardy of not coming back for a season four. I think there's definitely enough interest. And according to what I've heard, they're already writing season four. So hopefully that's not wasted effort.
Yes, I read somewhere that they intended to make Mandalorian season three right after Book of Boba Fett ended. But they were using those stages to make the Obi-Wan Kenobi show, and so they had to wait.
Oh, is that what it was?
And okay. that's why we had this big stretch with nothing. But did read that Favreau has already written season four, and so I imagine they'll get right on that. The post-production takes a long time, but it doesn't take nearly as long as it used to because of what is that soundstage called?
The volume.
The volume. There you go.
I should have said Elia Kane.
There you go. All right. Well, hey, I've made you stay up late once again, but I really appreciate you hanging out with me and talking Star Wars again.
Yeah.
You said something at the very, very beginning of the episode, and I'm going to open it up to anybody that's listening. Let's do another Q&A episode at some point. If we ever have had one, if you guys have questions and things that you'd like us to talk about, mention them in the comments or on Facebook. I think you could mention them on Twitter, but I would rather they just be in the comments so I can get them all at the same time. And we'll try and sit down and do an episode where we talk about whatever it is that you guys are interested in. Sometimes people have questions and it makes us ask things that we've never even considered. And I dig that.
Yeah, no, I would love to do a full Q&A episode where all we do is answer questions from listeners. So if you listen to the Delusions of Grandeur podcast and you want to hear more and you want to hear our thoughts, not that we're going away, but just if you want to hear us answer your questions about anything in Star Wars, whether it be Mandalorian or Caravan of Courage. Yeah, let us know. And yeah, we'll definitely put together a Q&A episode. That'd be a lot of fun. You could send those in with an email if you wanted to. And I also have a voicemail. So let me give you those avenues of asking us a question as well. That'd be a lot of fun to have a bunch of voicemails to answer people asking questions. So the voicemail line for the Delusions of Grandeur is 77JN2107. Just dial that up on your phone and leave us a 3-minute message with a question in it, and we'll get to that. You can also email at journeyintopodcast@gmail.com. We'll get that. You can post right on this episode, whether it's in Patreon or on the main feed. I will remember to leave the comments open on this episode on the main feed. And yeah, Facebook and Twitter, sure. Check us out over there too. Journey Into is what you'd look for there on Twitter and Facebook. And if you do feel like supporting us over on Patreon, you can go over to patreon.com/journeyinto and... Rish, why don't you talk about your other podcast that you do?
I did already.
Oh, okay.
I have a podcast called The Rish Outcast that has been going for a while, where I occasionally present a story that I have written or someone else's story, or more often just talk about something that is of interest to me. Every once in a while, I will have Marshall as a guest on that
show. Yeah, I've been on there a few times this past year. So yeah, we welcome you to also support Rish on his podcast. Is patreon.com/rishoutfield. And yeah, we'll be back soon. We'll at least talking about more Mandalorian stuff. It might be after the show's over. It might be the next 3 episodes. Who knows? We'll keep you guessing on that one. But thanks, Rish, for getting us back in gear and doing Delusions of Grandeur again. And may the Force be with you.
Journey on. Good night.
Good night.
Confectionarian Wilro Hood said you were coming. He told me your show was the best. let you cut out 5 minutes of ums in every episode. Forgive me if I am a bit skeptical. They say that it is done under a Creative Commons 3.0 license, that one can download it, listen, and share it, but not sell it or claim the files for oneself. I hear podcasting is a complicated profession. Don't you agree?
Three, and do that Luke Skywalker stuff at the beginning of the season instead of doing it in the middle of Book of Boba Fett. I don't know.
No, you're totally right. It's such a strange choice to have important things happen to the main character of another show on a spin-off show or on a side show. You know, there are times when they'll have, like, you know, the Law and Orders cross over with each other. And if they had, like, some major thing happen to the characters from the other show on the crossover show, it seems counterproductive. Well, it seems... Hey, Marshall? Marshall, did you hang up again?